This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no bail for Jeffrey Epstein.
That's right.
You know what I love?
Yeah.
He offered $559 million for bail. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know what you have? You have a passport with somebody else's name on it.
From
Saudi
Arabia.
Dozens of diamonds and stamps from Saudi Arabia in there.
Yeah.
I'm guessing a guy with his track record didn't go to Saudi Arabia to see the fucking sights.
It was a fake passport with his name, and it was saying he was from Saudi Arabia.
Oh, but I thought it was used to enter Saudi Arabia.
No, I thought they were saying that it was a fake. His lawyers kept saying that the reason why he has it is because if he gets caught by someone, he doesn't want to look like who he is. So he has a fake passport to make it look like he's someone else.
Right.
But part of me thinks that he has that thing because
I had thought it had stamps that it had been used to travel.
I thought
I had read that.
Could be.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like that's
I know it was a fake name, right?
Yeah,
which again is another offense, right? It's like another thing.
That's like some Bond villain.
That's like
shit.
Some horror. I think that's horribly illegal. Like it can't be like, oh, that Jeffrey, he's got his.
I just want to get in trouble with his real name.
Yeah.
That's what his lawyer said.
I know.
What does he want to get in trouble with his real name? So I love that. Like the guy's like, I'll give you $500 million. Yeah. They're just like,
hard pass.
No.
Yeah.
No.
How about no? How about one child isn't worth that?
Here's a word you don't respect. No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I am loving this.
Yeah.
Like if he's guilty of this shit, like this is how he got. And it seems very clear from the plea agreement, right? So I don't think it's a stretch for me to say from the plea agreement. This is how we need to behave, right? Like, I love the idea that the climate has changed in such a way that in 2019 versus when he was captured the first time.
2007 or 2006,
That now, like, the world looks at this and is like, this is intolerable.
Yeah.
We will not tolerate it.
It's crazy how much of it got pushed under the rug before.
Oh, I know.
And it's because of the way the deal was structured is that a lot of people didn't know about it. And it was the investigative journalism that a lot of people put together to finally crack this and to make it big news. But it was not big news. Even after it happened, it was not big news. And it was like the Miami Herald and other people that put it together. You know, I can imagine even like some of the celebrities that he hung out with probably didn't know a lot about it, right? Because it wasn't like the way the deal was structured, nobody really knew a lot about
it.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't think Katie Couric is fucking kids at his mansion.
No.
You know
no,
what I mean?
No.
Like I think that he's a celebrity that people were involved with and they thought it was a prostitution charge because that's what everybody said it was.
Well, beyond that too, it's like association is not the same thing as a deep friendship, right? Like going to somebody's barbecue doesn't mean you know everything about who they are and how they behave and what their criminal history is. Like it is not like association that's like a repeated association.
Sure.
Association that's like a familiar association, an intimate association, it's different than like, once hung out with this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what everybody I've ever hung out with has done. So that guilt by association stuff, like you got to be real leery about the kind of association.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's a ring of truth to it. And sometimes it's just, that's a social circle. That's somebody I know in my social circle.
Retweets do not mean endorsement.
Yes.
You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right.
like that's how you got to kind of look at it sometimes.
Right.
And other times, you know, he might have been close with, very close with Bill Clinton. He might have been very close with Donald Trump. He might have been very close with some of these other really rich guys that, you know, and maybe they were doing some shady shit. As soon as I see the evidence, as soon as they break the evidence, yeah, I'm happy to hear about it. And as soon as they break the evidence, throw them away. I'm fine with it. Fucking as soon as they're prosecuted, let's do it. Right. Let's fucking Thunderdome this shit. Let's get it on. But what I don't want to do is speculate and start running into like, oh, well, here's a picture of him with Trump at a party.
Yeah.
Is it creepy? Yeah, it's creepy as shit, man. Watch that video. Like, it's gross. Like, you're like, yeah. And also, those are the whitest people dancing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like that, like the entire cheerleader like group.
Oh God.
They look so terrible out there. They look like they're gonna crash into each other at any moment. They all look like Julie Dreyfus.
Yeah, right.
When she's on Seinfeld and she's doing the like the crazy. They all look like her.
Yeah, it's insane.
And you know, Trump and Jeffrey definitely look like predators. I'm not going to say they don't look like predators, but they're also, you know, in their element, I think, at that point. And, you know, very rich guys in a room full of women. And, you know, none of these were underage girls.
No, right.
So,
and like, I don't want to defend them as good people. I think they're both awful people for different reasons. Maybe for the same reason, I don't know, but at least now for different reasons. Well, I think it is important to have moral standards, right?
Yeah.
And the moral standard is like, as soon as you know something about somebody, you have to act on it, right? The minute you know, like, holy shit, this person is a sexual predator.
Sure.
Like, you have a responsibility to excise that person from your life.
Sure.
You're just like, yeah, a person's gone.
Yeah.
I don't think it's reasonable to be judged for things that you didn't know. You know what I mean? And
sure,
I do think that there's some element of that that's kind of floating around where it's like, you should have known. Like, hey—
It's hard. It's hard to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know. Like, we're not a part of this.
Yeah.
But I am worried. I'm very concerned about him having him in charge of the nuclear weapons, because I think his response, his visceral response to attack people on their appearance, short, tall, fat, ugly. My goodness, that happened in junior high. Are we not way above that? Would we not all be worried to have someone like that in charge of the nuclear arsenal?
Mr. Trump?
I never attacked him on his look. And believe me, there's plenty of subject matter right there.
So this is, this story I grabbed, Cecil, because I can't think of anything that could act as more of a microcosm of how perfectly broken our political system is right now. This story is from CNN. Rand Paul stops unanimous passage of 9/11 first responders funding bill. Here's what the 9/11 first responders funding bill is. Hey, you know the first responders who ran in and then they got sick? Like, we should probably give them medical care for life, because—
Yeah, take care of all those people till there's a date in the future. I forget what it is, 2070 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just like, they ran into that shit and a lot of them died and some of them didn't, and many of them are getting terribly sick as a result. And at the end of the day, against the trillions of dollar budget, this is a line item which is de minimis.
Yeah.
It's absolutely de minimis. And we can't get everybody on board with this.
Yeah.
We have people like Rand Paul is like, yeah, I'm just worried about the money. Like, he's like, it's just too much money. I don't want to spend. What do you want to spend money on? Like, at what point are you like, you know what's not worth it? The medical care. This is why, like I think about like trying to get like Medicare for all. We have a tiny, tiny group of people that like America has already decided are heroes. And we're just like, it's not worth the money. It's not worth the money to keep our heroes alive. Well, it's broken, man. Yeah. The whole fucking system's broken.
Well, one of the things that he's saying is that, you know, I think a lot of the way this was reported initially was like somehow he had some way to block the bill. And that's not true. He just made it so it went into debate, right? So he pushed it into debate. There was a lot of people who were saying, hey, and I think Gillibrand was one of those people, like, let's just fast track this fucking thing. All of us agree, right? It's like one of those things where just like, we're getting pizza, everybody, right? We're cool with pizza.
Right.
And then you got some asshole in the corner is like, no, I'm a vegan. Fuck you, asshole. Eli, you motherfucker. But, you know, like the thing is that this guy basically says, no, Rand Paul, libertarian, right? Mm-hmm. Just like his dad. I'm not going to do this. I don't want to do this because I want to see a cut for what this costs. But he cut taxes already, right? So he was one of the people who voted for the tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about him voting for the tax cut, you can't cut the revenue and then bitch about, oh, well, now we've got another spending, so we've got to cut against it. You're like, you're cutting expense at this point. You're cut. How much revenue did you cut? $2 trillion you cut from the budget? And you're so super fiscally minded that you cut $2 trillion from the budget and now you're bitching about the deficit? You fucking created the deficit, you fool.
He doesn't want to spend money or take money in. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, he doesn't want to spend money. He doesn't want to take money in. He wants all the money to remain in the hands of the people that earn it or work for it or whatever, right? So no spending, no taxing. Like, it all stays in the hands of the person. And that would be fine if we lived in some kind of utopia where all the infrastructure was permanently built and nothing had to be maintained and we didn't have to take care of each other and we didn't want a social safety net. But that's the problem with the libertarian model. It doesn't actually work. You can't do that.
Well, and also the math doesn't work for what you just said, because you can't bitch about the deficit and then say, we're not going to take in any money and we're not going to spend any money, because your deficit is still fucking there if you don't take in more money and pay off the deficit. It doesn't even make any sense. So instead, you cut $2 trillion in taxes, which could be going to pay off some of your deficit to get that down, if that's such an important fucking thing to you, which it clearly is, because you don't want to fucking, like, give people fucking healthcare because of it. People who deserve it, right? Of all the people in the states that deserve it, these people deserve it. He's like, now, you know what? We're going to cut these taxes and then I'm going to cut this. And he's bitching about this. Wait, did he bitch about fucking the jingoism parade? The money that we spent on that? Does he bitch about the fucking golf outings and stuff? You could probably fund this bill for a long time with just the amount of money he spends going golfing.
It's millions of dollars.
It's hundreds of millions of dollars. It's easy.
Yeah. This is like saying, like, hey, are we going to treat our kid's broken arm or are we going to pay off our credit card?
Right.
Well, what are you fucking talking about? We have an emergency. You carry some debt. Nations carry debt.
Yeah.
All nations carry debt. It's not even necessarily a bad thing. Nations carry debt.
I want to say that I am not a racist. I don't even see race. Not even my own. People tell me I'm white, and I believe them because I just devoted 6 minutes to explaining how I'm not a racist.
So this story comes from everywhere, but this particular story comes from Axios.
There's actually two in a row. We might as well put them both up, Tom. I'll put this other one up, too.
All right. So this is Axios.com. Trump supporters echo his racist tweets, chanting, send her back. And the other one is Trump blasts four congresswomen. Crowd roars, send her back. So Trump's ongoing fucking rallies that just have never stopped from the minute he announced his candidacy all through his presidency, which, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to do, to just go and have a fucking popularity masturbation contest or whatever this is all about. So what he's referring to is the tweet calling out the squad. So the squad is Ocasio-Cortez, Omar, Presley, and Tlaib.
Maybe it's not Tlaib.
I don't know how to pronounce it. T-L-A-I-B.
I don't know how to say T. I think you got to change the fucking vowels around in that for me to even be able to say
it. Put the T and an L next to each other.
I don't know how to say that. But these are all freshman congresswomen.
Right.
They're all freshman congresswomen.
Right.
And
they're very progressive.
Yeah.
They're very progressive and they're all women of color.
Yeah.
And Trump tweeted out basically saying that
Let me read it. Let me read what he said.
Okay, yeah.
So he said, interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept everywhere in the world, even if they are a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places which they came and then come back and show us how it's done. Sorry, it's the spanning tweets. I apologize.
No, it's fine.
These places need your help badly and you can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements. And so that's what he had to say to them. And
it's unreal.
And then it's echoed at his thing too.
So it goes to his rallies and now it's become a rallying cry, right? It's become the new lock her up, right?
Yeah.
Is now send her back.
Send her back.
Interesting that it's always a her, right? And by interesting, I don't mean subtle or surprising.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So it is consistent.
It's fucking obvious is what it is.
Right.
It's fucking obvious.
Obvious troll is obvious.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If there's ever been a fucking misogyny in just completely encapsulated, it's President Trump.
Yes. Right? I mean, the man does not give a shit.
Yeah.
Does not give a shit. Like, he is a misogynist to his absolute tiny, tiny boners.
Yeah.
So, yeah, ridiculous. This fucking little mushroom or whatever Stormy called it.
Let's talk about the tweets for a second.
Yeah.
Before we get into the sender back.
I had some notes on that.
Yeah, let's talk about these tweets for a second. So, first off, three of the four women were born here. So the idea that go back to where you came from, they're here already. So three of the four women, and one of the women, the one who came here, has been here longer than Melania Trump. So
yeah, but she came from Mogadishu in Somalia, and that's browner than where Melania came from. So time works different. It's like white years, you know, they're like dog years,
but just different. It's like white places versus not white places.
Well, we have light years. Now we have white years.
Now we have white years. Why has it got to be a black hole? but that, first off, you know, like you're such a fucking idiot that you go onto Twitter to tell people to go back where they came from. Like, what, the Bronx? Am I going to go back? I'm already here. I'm already representing where I live.
Wasn't she Puerto Rican?
Yeah.
Like
one of them was
Puerto Rican. That's America.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't know that, though. He either doesn't know it or doesn't care.
Yeah.
Right? And so
he's second generation from Germany.
Yeah.
His grandfather's from Germany. How many generations back do you have to find before you're
Part of, before you're part of America. Before you're part of America. Before you belong here. Yeah. Right? This whole thing reeks. First off, it reeks of privilege. Right? Because the idea that you would look at someone else and say to them, if you don't like it here, go. Number one, they're in Congress to try to change things for party, right? So you don't get to tell me to go anywhere. I'm here to fucking change shit so my party is happy and my constituents are happy. So fuck you. You don't get to tell me to go anywhere. It's not your fucking government.
Right.
It's our government, motherfucker. And then also just the privilege of being able to say, well, if you don't like it, you can leave. Who the fuck can pack up their life and go somewhere else? Very few people have the privilege to be able to walk away from an entire life built here in the United States and just travel somewhere else. Be like, you know what? I don't like it there. I'm going to go somewhere else. It takes a lot of fucking liquid income to be able to fucking just pick up and move from the United States.
Well, like his comment to your prior point, his comment that like, that's what Congress is supposed to do, is identify problems and fix them.
Right.
So his thing, like, if you don't like it here, it's like, no. Criticizing something is not the same as burning it down. And the slogan, the very slogan of Donald Trump is make America great again, which implies, in the words, it implies that America is not great and needs to be fixed.
Right.
So it's fucking insane that he would then point at these congresswomen and be like, because you're critical, that means you don't like this country. Well, your slogan, your fucking slogan in and of itself is a slogan in which embedded is a criticism, a serious criticism that America is not great. That is a point that these women and myself would probably agree with you on.
Right, right.
That something can be worth keeping and still need fixing, right? Like, we don't abandon everything that has a fucking problem to
it. Right.
Like, or nobody would keep their kids.
You would at least send them away to faraway camp where they spend all their life. I don't know what they call those, away schools, boarding
Somalia.
Schools. Mogadishu.
You always wanted to be a pirate. Well, here's your chance, kid.
I want to go home.
I'm just looking around.
Where's Johnny Depp or whatever that guy's name is?
What's that guy's name? It's not Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, okay, Yeah.
I don't know if you're thinking of something else.
I don't know either.
Yeah, no, that is, he was a pirate in one of his movies. Yes, he was. This is also, very interestingly, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission specifically cites the phrase, go back to where you came from, as the type of language that could violate anti-discrimination employment laws in certain circumstances.
Oh, really? I wonder why. Maybe because it's inherently racist and it's a fucking dog whistle that's been used forever. Yeah. It's not even a dog whistle. It's an explicit.
I know. It's we skip past the dog whistle. We took the dog whistle, we threw it, and we grabbed a wheel whistle. And now we're up in your ear, being like, tweet, tweet, motherfucker.
Literally, tweet, tweet.
Everybody's looking around like, did you didn't just say that, did you? And the entire Republican Party is just like, oh, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
You're allowed to say that. You're good.
Yeah.
You know what this reminds me of? When I was a kid, my dad used to have these, my dad used to tell stories of Chicago from when he was growing up. And my dad was a racist, shitty guy. But my dad also was the subject of, I don't know if it's racism, but, you know, he was a nationality that some people didn't like, right? So he was...
There's some discrimination. As a result of his,
yeah, discrimination. Yeah, that's better, I think, than saying racism, because he pretty much looked like everybody else. But there was, if they found out who he was or they knew where he lived, those types of things followed you around, right?
Okay.
And so one of the things that he was telling me was when he grew up in a Czechoslovakian Polish neighborhood, right? Okay. Because his dad died when he was very young. So the namesake, my last name's Italian, his namesake was dead. So his mom moved to this Polish neighborhood. So he grew up Polish, Czechoslovakian. He didn't grow up Italian, right? Mm-hmm. But there was an Italian neighborhood just across the way from them. And he said, growing up, he said, you didn't go there because they'd kick the shit out of you. They would beat the shit out of you if you went over there. And he's like, and I know the same thing happened with Black people for many years, well after sure. I'm sure that happened. But that, go back to where you came from, is segregationist language too. It's not just immigration language, right? Where you say that. It's segregationist language. Go back to where you came from. Get back to your ghetto. Go back to where you belong.
Stay in your lane.
Go back and shut the fuck up. I got this. This is my country, not your country. You're a lesser partner here. And it's the most offensive, racist thing I think he's said. He has said a lot of racist things. Good people on both sides is horribly racist, especially after someone dies, right?
Right.
Horribly racist, shockingly racist. They didn't call it out as racism. Bunch of other stuff has gone on since then. And, you know, there's so much, I literally cannot even remember it all. I'd have to look at an article of some sort to try to refresh my memory because there's so much. But this is the one thing that I have seen the news media turn their heels and say, nope, this is racist. This right here, we're stopping all this. He said something that was racially charged.
Right.
This is racist, period. Yeah. And I have not seen anybody falter on that.
Yeah. Is Fox News calling this racist?
I don't
racist,
know. Okay.
You know?
So maybe, but I don't pay attention to Fox News.
It's
so
not
I don't
real
know.
News.
Yeah.
You know, what's amazing is his popularity, not amazing, but like what's worth noting is the popularity within his base went up.
Yeah.
After this.
Right.
Like it went up.
Because it's what they want to say to people.
Right. Because this is, yeah, exactly. Right. And I think your point about like, this is segregationist. One of the thoughts I had was like, this is not just racist. I think it's interesting that these are all women. It's go back where you came from, the fucking kitchen.
That's
right?
That's a great analysis. Something I didn't even consider.
Get the fuck out of here. Yep. Get out of Congress. Get out of being in our faces. This
fucking
is the
A.
boys club.
Fucking A, man.
And you don't deserve to be here.
Absolutely. Great analysis. I totally missed that. It did. It just went right up. Because I'm focusing so much on the race, but you're right. It's gender too, man. They are minorities.
Right.
Right. And so they are struggling to, you know, they have a different life than the billionaire white guy that's the president right now. Very different life.
Wait, which one do you think is, okay, no, I think I know. Which one is more powerful? Billionaire president white guy or immigrant from Somalia?
What they,
you didn't even answer the, was that,
is it? I thought it was obvious. what is crazy to me too is when people say this isn't racist, they go out of their way to say, you know, you've heard a litany of Republicans come out and try to apologize for this. When they ask Mitch McConnell.
Oh my God.
They ask Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell standing there is like, well, I don't think it was racist. He sounds like fucking Forrest Gump. It makes me crazy. But anyway, he's standing there and he's like, and he's talking, and they ask him the question, your wife is a naturalized citizen. How would you feel if someone said this to your wife is what they asked him. Great fucking question. And he never answers it. He's like, I think both sides need to come together. And there's too much invective on both sides. And it's like,
no, where's the invective?
Well, that's the problem is they don't like these women because they think Trump has brainwashed people into thinking they hate America. What do they want? What's the big thing that they say that hates America? What's the big thing? They want healthcare for all. They want people to pay for public school, for people to go to public schools.
Yeah.
You know, they want
environmental policies that actually protect the goddamn environment.
There's all these things that they want. You're just like, how does, point to the policy that says they hate their country.
I will say what I think that this is primarily about is the impeach the motherfucker comment.
That comment,
right?
Yeah.
So that, because that's a direct attack against him as a person. And we have a man with fucking paper skin as our president.
Right.
Somehow he's got like fucking wet rice paper for his fucking skin.
Yeah.
He's the least powerful man that I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable the weakness of this man. So somebody says like impeach him. If somebody in my work said like, Tom, I'm going to get you fired. I'd be like, good fucking luck. I do a good job.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. Give it a whirl, buddy. Let me know how that goes. Yeah. Like, I'm not afraid. He doesn't like this shit because it damages his, it's a vote in his popularity contest he doesn't get, right? Yeah. Because the rallies and so much of what he does is, and he says so, everybody loves me. I went there and people love me. I'm a great guy. People think I'm a great guy. Me.
Yeah.
He's a civil servant who has it backwards. He behaves as if the country works for him rather than he works for the country.
Right.
And then he also, by the way, he won't say who he was referring to. When they ask him directly, he says,
how is that?
It's some people.
I'm not saying who it is. I never said who it was about. That's what he said. He's like, I never said who it was
what
about.
What a wiener. What a fucking wiener.
You're such
a
coward.
You're such a coward.
Like, God. If you say, you know, he's like, oh, I never said it was, I could have been talking about literally anybody out there, except for I mentioned Pelosi, right?
Right.
So it's got to be, and you say progressive Democrat, right?
Yeah, progressive Democrat. You know, we know we're talking about progressive Democratic women, and the thing of Pelosi is obviously a jive to make like, to highlight the tension within the Democratic Party, which has existed between the squad and Pelosi.
Sure.
It's obvious who he's fucking referring to.
Sure.
It's obvious. Like, what the idea, too, that, like, anybody who levels criticism at the country doesn't love the country. The only thing, look, the only time people are critical of things is when they want it to be better.
Right.
Right? Like, I don't spend my time being critical of Iran except for this show, right? To highlight things that they've done as atrocities for the show. I don't care about them. It's not where I live. I don't have any vested real interest in their success or failure, except for as it impacts the larger world around us and, you know, myself. And we care about, when we criticize, it's a way to say like, I'd like this to be better. I think it can be better.
Sure.
The idea that like criticizing means that you hate something and you want to like tear it down. And so like, you should be removed from, how are we going to fix anything?
Yeah.
Is everything perfect? Or do we have like, lots of shit to do.
Yeah.
I think we have lots of shit to do. We can't even get a bill passed to give first responders health care.
Yeah. So there's a KKK billboard that some of this is modeled after. It says, this is Klan country. Love it or leave it.
Jesus
and
Christ.
And they call these women communists. They call them like, they say that they hate the country. And he has brainwashed all these people. And all these people are chanting, send her back. And when he was asked about it today, again, cowardly move. When he was asked about it again today, they said, he's like, oh, I didn't agree with that crowd saying that. It's bullshit.
Come on.
It's bullshit.
He fed it to the crowd.
He fed it to them.
Like in the language. That is a lie. That's just.
Right.
Well, I mean, who's shocked?
I don't know why it's just him blatantly lying again and again and again and again.
He fed that to the crowd.
Right.
Oh my God.
But one thing I am happy about, and I did listen to an NPR code something. I don't know what it's code breakers, code search, code something.
Code Duello?
That's a citation needed episode. Citation needed, one of the top 40 podcasts that you should be listening to. Hilarious podcast by uprocks.com. Code Switch is what it's called.
Okay.
Code Switch on NPR. They had these two journalists on. And one journalist was arguing that we shouldn't be calling it racist because we shouldn't be making that judgment. We should just be telling people what he said and let other people making that judgment. And the other person was like, it crosses a line. This is racist. And there was kind of an argument back and forth between these two journalists who were it was a really polite, super polite argument.
Right. It's an NPR argument.
Super polite.
Two Canadians getting in a fight.
Yeah, I know. Slap fighting each other with beaver tails. Pouring maple. They have to fight in maple syrup.
But it's just lumberjacks and maple syrup fighting each other with beaver tails. It sounds like a porn I've seen.
I'd watch it again. I'd bookmark that shit. You kidding me? But the thing is, the concept is that, you know, the one person is saying, look, I don't think we should call it racist. I think we should let other people do it. If that's the case, if we should be able to say that this is particularly racist, I've read plenty of things that Trump have said and I can call it imbecilic. He's like, but I shouldn't. I should let people read it. And, you know, he's like, but I guarantee, he's like, I'm an editor. He's like, that is the worst thing I've ever read. He's like, it's absolutely imbecilic. He's like, but that's a judgment I make. And it was a really interesting back and forth. I don't know that, I mean, I think I fall on the side of the people who are like, no, we need to call it out as racism. So that there's enough people who recognize that this is, you know, it pops enough eyes. It gets enough eyes onto this to pay attention to it. So even if you didn't read the tweets, you're not on Twitter, you didn't pay attention, you at least hear about this in some way. Cause you're like racist, you know, cause this, I genuinely feel like this is one of the first times they've actually been using that particular language.
Yeah. I don't feel like that's like the news's job is not to dispassionately just like, it's not a camera, right? Writing is never a camera, I guess is what I mean to say. Like writing always contains some element of choice.
Sure.
In terms of like what it shows and what it portrays and how it describes.
Yeah.
It's language.
Yeah.
So in terms of like writing a story, I don't know, man. Like you're not just nobody would read it.
Yeah.
Here is what Trump said. Okay, well, why is that interesting? What does that mean? Like there's analysis that's part of reporting.
Sure.
That matters.
Sure. I think that, you know, the couple of one or two things points he had were interesting, but I didn't agree with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's an interesting, like I said, Code Switch, check it out. It's about, I think it's called, Is This Racist Now? Is the name of the show. And it's about a 25-minute show. It was pretty interesting though. Like, you know, you get a chance to see the thought process that goes into this. And I don't think the thing that I think I want to stress by even mentioning this is that these guys don't take this shit lightly.
Yeah.
They don't just say it, you know, yeah, sure. Fucking probably HuffPo and a few others have been saying racist for a long time. Right. And I don't disagree that some of the stuff he has said is racist. I'm not saying that, but some of these bigger players, NPR, for example, who does try to be really, you know, I think as center as they can be, you know, they're clearly left, but they, you know, they're centrist in most ways. They are even coming out and saying, and I think that that's the thing I want to say is that it's a powerful moment where people are actually saying, no, fuck, we've got to actually call this racism.
It's a difference from the hyperbolic news, right? And the hyperbolic editorializing.
Sure. It's not raw story.
Right.
It's not right wing wash.
Yeah. Clickbaity shit.
And you know, the thing is like, it's not that I disagree, and I'm not saying I disagree with those people because I very often I do. But in this case, you know, now it's coming into the mainstream. It's creeping into the mainstream.
Bridget Wexler is the home's headmistress.
Well, we figured we'd make it easier on Clayton by just telling him and all the other blind kids that he was white.
This story comes from CNN.com. White GOP congressman says he isn't offended by racist Trump tweets because I'm a person of color. Being here is Representative Mike Kelly. And here's what he says. He says, you know, they talk about people of color. Well, I'm a person of color. I'm white. I'm an Anglo-Saxon. People say things all the time, but I don't get offended. Okay, I hate the term so much. Get woke. But nobody's ever been less woke than this fucking guy. This guy is comatose as fuck. Are you serious? This is like Captain Privilege. What is happening? It's farcical.
If they make Band-Aids default in your skin color, you do not get to talk about being a person of color.
Oh my God.
You just don't.
Like, does he misunderstand? Like, he must, right? Yeah. He's obviously either playing on words by saying, I'm a person of color, I'm white. In which case it's a grotesque thing to say because that means he does understand.
Yeah.
Or he genuinely is just like, everybody's a color. Yeah. What? There's no translucent people.
It's like the ditzy girl from Friends, you know, like whatever.
You know? Chicken of the sea, is it chicken or fish? Yeah. Like, what the fuck? And it goes on later on to say, he says, with a name like Mike Kelly, you can't be from any place but Ireland. He said his broader point is that we're all created equal and it's time to stop fixating on our differences, particularly our superficial ones, and focus on what unites us. Attempts by Democrats in the media to divide and define us by race are harmful. We need to elevate our level of discussion. He's saying this in response to a racist tweet
right.
by the president aimed at people that are minorities, telling them to go back to their country of origin because they are not welcome in the United States. That's a thing.
Well, you guys are really being duty heads about the whole racist thing.
Well, I couldn't. What? First off, watch this video if you get a chance. All it is scrolling tweets. It's like Tom's nightmare. It's like these guys just for two straight minutes read scrolling tweets to that. It's like amazing journalism, by the way. Amazing journalism.
Let me read to you what you could read for yourself.
Yeah. This guy is just such a twat. And the thing is like, you don't even realize you're such a fucking clown. Like you can't realize how much of a fucking clown you are when you say something like this. Like you said, it's privilege. It just reeks of privilege. And you look at this guy and you're just like, holy shit, you are the kind of old white guy that tells people to get off his lawn. Like, you just look at this guy. He looks angry. He looks like he's going to yell at you because you stopped too long at the stoplight. He's just like super mad.
I love it. He's like, well, it doesn't bother me because the invective is not aimed at you.
That's what you hear all the time.
That's an amazing thing to say. Like, well, it wouldn't bother me if it were me. You don't understand. Like, you are shielded. You are protected by, that is what privilege does. That's literally one of the things that privilege does is it puts you in a place where you are protected.
Yeah. What's interesting is when they say like, you could call me cracker. You could call me cracker, right? You could say that, right? You'd be like, you're a cracker. Okay.
Can I call you cracker?
I'm a cracker, sure. I'm a cracker. Sounds right. Great, right? The idea is that doesn't hurt me because I'm one of the privileged groups.
Right.
So it'd be like saying, you got a huge cock.
Right.
I'd be like, okay, cool story. Yeah. It's one of the privileged groups. You know, it matters when it's the N-word. It matters when it's another ethnic slur. It matters then because they're not a privileged group. When you're just like, yeah, I'm white. Doesn't bother me that people call me white. No shit, you dumb motherfucker.
Because like all that does is ensconce you in your position of power rather than constantly remind you of your lesser social status.
Less than being,
What the, like how is this difficult to understand?
Well, that's, and I guarantee this isn't a fucking single person's view. I guarantee there's a lot of people in Congress that have the exact same view. Oh. They don't think that privilege is a thing. There's a million people out there who probably don't even stop. They stopped listening to this podcast a long time ago. Thank fucking God, by the way. I don't even believe in God and I'll thank him for that. But it's like, you know, they stop listening to this podcast because they get mad because you point out their privilege. They get super butthurt about it. They're like, oh my God, what are you saying? I don't have privilege. We get shitty YouTube comments. I don't even read them anymore. But you get shitty YouTube comments from twats who don't want to face the fact that they grew up and they had it on easy mode.
Right.
They had an easy button and other people didn't have it. And somehow that fucking hurts their fifi so bad that they get so like, oh, you can't say that. Oh, I had it super tough. It doesn't mean it. You made it 100% because you're white, but you certainly probably benefited because of it.
Well, it's like you have an easier button, right?
It's easier.
Like, you might've had a hard life.
Yeah.
You might've had a hard go individually, but also like, the whole idea of privilege is it is a way to talk about people in terms of demographic groups and demographic realities, not individual realities. Individual realities may vary.
Yeah.
Like there are people that grow up with privilege that are not white. There are people that grow up white that have tremendous disadvantage. That's not the point. The anecdotes don't in any way affect the larger demographic truths that are important to realize and that's what that conversation is about, because you build policy, not for anecdotes, but you build policy to address demographic truths.
Sure.
It's amazing to me how many people are like, well, I didn't experience this. So therefore it's not largely true universally. Like no one is like writing a bill called here's what happens when time, like nobody cares about you individually. There's 300 and however many million people here.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too, is that, you know, which we've been hearing from the Republican Party because of these tweets and other things is this constant, well, how in the world can the president be racist? He had like a black person in his cabinet. Like he's had black friends. It's like, are you seriously bringing out, I have a black friend so I can say the N-word? Is that what we're doing here? That's what we're doing. And you know, you're absolutely right. I think that these people have a myopic view when they get confronted about privilege. They have a myopic view when they look at their own life and they say, well, I don't see it. One, it's invisible to you, so it's hard to see, right? You have to really step back and understand all the different privileges that you had throughout your life. But not just that, you step back and you're like, well, I don't see it. It's okay. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist, number one. And it might not have helped you as much as it helped other people.
Right.
But like you said, you're taking it too fucking personally. You're saying, you're attacking me. I earned what I... Okay, nobody's saying that. What we're saying is you benefited from privilege, probably. Good chance you benefited from privilege. That's it.
What I don't understand about that is like, I know that I benefited from privilege, right? I'm a white, middle-class, hetero male.
Right.
Like, you've
got the bingo card.
I hit the fucking lottery.
You blacked out the bingo card without the black.
Like,
without being black, I guess.
I think it's a time. Well, you could never go back.
And you're
not the other way.
You're not poor because you're not playing bingo. But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. So.
Or Catholic. Yeah. Well, I guess like there's a part of me that's like, well, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
You can be grateful for it. Like you can recognize it. You don't have to feel guilty. You can instead be grateful for it and then also hope that it changes in the future.
Recognize
those things are not exclusive.
Yeah.
I'm grateful that like my life was a little easier. I would like other people's lives to be easier in the same ways. We don't want to do that. We want to, like there's a sense that like if I recognize it, that I have to be ashamed of it or something, or that rather than say like, you know, that was great. And it would be great if my life were replicatable to other people.
Right.
Because I know that like I had certain advantages. I'd like other people to have those advantages. Well, that doesn't mean that I don't want my advantages.
Sure.
Right? Like, it's just that I want to carry them forward.
Help other people get them too.
Find a lawyer, cause you'll need one. Write a book or learn to read one. Or get your eyebrows bleached, cause... Just relax at the spa, go fuck yourself at Mar-a-Lago if you get impeached.
I don't... You know, Tom, every week we come in and I really do miss... the days when we didn't just spend all our time on politics.
Me too.
Because there was so much good, funny shit out there to talk about. And, you know, when I think back even to Bush era stuff, I don't remember covering politics this much, but there's, I mean, like every 90 seconds.
Yeah, well, the world's gone mad.
It's like a neutron star. It's spinning so fast. It's like every few seconds, there's a brand new scandal, something crazy, something that you have to, like if you would neglect to talk about it, you're missing the biggest, one of the biggest stories of the week, but that's only for tonight.
I know.
It's crazy.
You're not even wrong.
It's crazy. And I want to go back to where we were, which was, you know.
Let's find some crazy news stories about like religious people. Yeah. That's insane-y. Like
those were great, but it's like I feel like I'm neglecting something if I don't talk about
it. I do
this
too. Stuff. That's why I throw these stories in everywhere. Yeah. I'm like, okay, but this happened and it's like a big deal. But I sometimes I think like, is it a big deal? Cause I'm gonna forget about it in 7 days.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know.
It's true.
So this story comes from the New York Times. House votes to kill Trump impeachment resolution. So Al Green, a Democrat in Texas, basically forced the issue to bring to the table an impeachment resolution. And he did not have the votes, the requisite votes ahead of time. He did not have the backing of the caucus. And the House was like, no, what? No. This is a mistake. This was a real fucking blunder, I think. To bring impeachment up and then to have the House shut it down just as quickly, it kind of makes it seem like it can't come back up again. You know what I mean? I know that technically it can.
Right.
But it's already a loss. To bring it up and to have it shut down is basically like kind of proof in the pudding. Look, even the Democrats aren't interested in impeachment.
Yeah.
So if it comes up again after the Mueller... testimony, if it comes up again, it's like, well, you guys already said no. Like, we already asked mom and dad, you know, and they said no. There's no one left to ask.
It's there is some back and forth on whether or not this is good or bad. Pelosi's been talking about, you know, how we shouldn't do it. Other people have been talking about, you know, we should do it. I am falling on the side of, I don't care whether it's politically... I really genuinely don't care whether it's politically correct, not correct, but politically advantageous is what I'm trying to say. I think it's necessary to do it for the the Mueller thing. I think you have to do it because there's enough there. And he basically said, guys, here's this thing. You should do it. And even if it's not politically advantageous, I think it's the duty of that office to stop the president if he's committing a crime. I certainly wouldn't want them to just be like, yeah, we're just going to let this rapist continue to rape people because we just don't want to, you know, we just think it's going to upset the apple cart. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, Jeffrey Epstein's a perfect example, right? You know, if that's the case, then why shouldn't we just be like, oh, well, let's just turn a blind eye. You know, if you're powerful, or it's not advantageous for our tiny little police station to do this, why should we care? And I think rule of law should mean something. I'm sure people will disagree with me, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay. Yeah. You know, and it's fine. If other people think, you know, you should be, it's political. We want to make sure we get rid of him, and a perfect way to get rid of him is 2020. You know, I get it. I understand where you're coming from, but I think it's a mistake to not go after him, for these things. That being said, I think that this is the incorrect way to do it. I think, you know, there's plenty of solid evidence, especially now with the Cohen thing that came out today. Oh, where the...
I was at work all day. I missed it. I read the news this afternoon. I read the news this morning.
Hope Hicks, Cohen, and President Trump, there is direct evidence of him being involved in paying off Stormy Daniels. Direct. And it's not just that his lawyer did it to help him. It's that there were conversations with him telling him to do this. And it was released today. All this material was released today to the public. So a bunch of this material got out into the public, and it was released by a judge who it was hidden before. Okay. And now it's not. Now it's like, no. And so it's clear campaign violations, clear. I mean, I think people were saying clear felony. So again, there is definitely a high crime here that we can start looking at. So there's a lot of avenues that they can go. But I think this is a bad way to. A bad way to do it. You know, I think you might be able to do other things. There's other, I think, congressional procedures that they can do to try to censure him or some other thing. You know, they can try to do things to him. But one thing I want to point out in this article that made me stop, it was the part where President Trump is accusing those women, the squad.
Yeah,
and he says they're dangerous, militant, hard left, hate-filled extremists who are constantly trying to tear our country down. They don't love our country. I think in most cases, they hate our country. You know what? If they don't love it, tell them to leave it. And that's directly from that. You talked about that sign that we mentioned earlier, the sign that love it or leave it, that KKK sign that's right. I mean, he said that at the rally last night. But the dangerous militant hard left is what caught me. Because I had a conversation the other day with a couple of people, and we all agreed there is no real hard left in this country. It's all centrists. Like, we're all like, the farthest left we get is like center left, like center left. And I'll tell you how I know this. Watching those debates, and they ask that question about healthcare, and two hands go up. And how many people on the stage were like, no, what we really got to do is give fellatio to all these insurance companies that have been fucking us forever. That's what we really need to do. You know, these are corporatist people. These aren't like hard left people. You want hard left people. These are not hard, hard left people. These are center left people. But they've painted what should be real basic human rights, which all other countries, many other countries that you wouldn't consider hard left countries, have all these rights, you know, college, the, you know, going to a doctor and not have the, and, you know, paying for it with your taxes, et cetera. Look at even how Bernie had to like crawl on the carpet because they asked him about taxes when that, you know, he's like, well, you're going to pay a little more in taxes, but don't worry, your other things are going to, like, other countries, they would just be like, yeah, we'll just pay for it. Like, we're cool with it. Like, that's okay. That's not hard left. That's centrist. And we have this idea that we're like, you know, like somehow these people are super radical lefties. They're like, if you look at like what a radical leftist is, that's nothing like what's in government right now.
Oh, no, not
at all. It's nothing like what's in government right now. But they want to call it and they want to paint it like this. But I will say, if you start looking at the right side of the spectrum, when you get like people like Steve King saying what's wrong with being a white nationalist, when you get people like Trump saying obviously racist things, that is much farther on the right than we ever are on the left.
Yeah, if we're creeping anywhere, we're creeping toward fascism, right? We're creeping hard right toward fascism. Yeah. And by creeping, I mean accelerating wildly.
Yeah, yeah, like
in that direction.
We're going to hit 88 miles an hour pretty soon.
Like all the...
And then the torch is all light on fire. And we all have our hoods on.
Like, if I'm not mistaken, all, and if it's not all, it's definitely most of the domestic terrorist acts have all been from far right groups, extremists.
Yeah. You're
going to talk about this dangerous, militant, hard left. When I think about dangerous, militant, hard right, I think about people shooting the place up, right? Because that keeps happening.
Sure.
It doesn't happen once or twice.
Yeah.
It keeps happening.
Yeah.
When I think about a dangerous, militant, hard left, I think about somebody being like, and we'll get some health care for you. Yeah. That's the dangerous, militant, hard left.
A real militant hard left would be like, proletariat needs to flip some shit. We need to start flipping tables. That's hard left. There is no hard left.
No.
There's nobody saying, let's fucking... You know, there's a couple of people saying we need to put more regulations on business or start busting them up a little. But nobody's saying, let's take all their assets and distribute them to all the people. That's hard left.
Right.
That's not what they're saying, right?
Left.
I just don't even understand this, but it's something that we keep saying. I want to say it's like, is it a Goebbels thing where it's like, say a lie enough? All I have to do is just keep saying enough. I don't know what the quote is, but you know what I mean. You know, understand the sentiment. Right. Just keep saying the lie over and over again. And that's what this is. This fucking far left, dangerous militant left. It's a lie. It's not. They're not far left, dangerous militant. They want a fucking couple of fucking concessions that some may consider barely socialist.
Yeah. They think that the idea is that they're going to destroy the country, meaning they're going to destroy the economy of the country.
Right.
I think is what they're trying to say. As an evidence of that would be the destroyed economy of all of Europe.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
The American dream is dead.
So before you introduce the story, I want to tell the listeners, when we play this clip, I just want you to turn it up just a little. And you can hear this fat fuck breathe. and he's one of those like, he's like, no, he's like literally like
he's got
making,
a wheeze in there?
Yeah, he's making sound, like he's like Fatty McGee from the Adam Sandler skit where he comes up the stairs. It's that. Yeah. It sounds, you can hear it. You can hear that.
Lord.
The sort of like my vocal cords even have fat on them.
My resting heart rate is 93. All right, some right wing watch. Josh Berenstein Bears urges Trump to become a dictator for patriotism.
What does that mean?
Oh, Cecil, let's dictator for patriotism.
The first time they pushed back against the wall, I did a video probably in, I don't know, I'm going to have to say March of 2017, where I literally looked at the camera and I declared that President Trump should declare war on Congress, both parties. And
right. That is a stupid thing to say. He's going to declare war.
Why would
and
he?
And then Congress is going to be like, we're going to not vote up that resolution.
Why would he declare war on his own party too? Like his own party, first off, when he takes office, was in power.
Right.
Like his own party had, they had everything.
In 2017, in March.
They had everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, this idea that you're going to be like, oh yeah, he should have declared war on his, you don't even know how the government works.
I love this idea that the president does not have the power to declare war.
Yeah,
he would have to go to Congress and be like, stop hitting yourself.
He comes with his bill. He's looking down at the ground. He's like, can you guys just sign this without looking at it?
Okay. You decided to say that. What? Yeah, you decided it. Senator, say what?
People thought I was absolutely out of my mind. But I'm a visionary. I'm able to see that things...
Oh my God, listen to him! Listen to him! He sounds like a bear!
He sounds like he's beaten off. That's what it sounds like. I'm going to rewind it a little bit.
That's so creepy.
See if you can hear this.
And people thought I was absolutely out of my mind. But I'm a visionary. I'm able to see that...
What the fuck? He is jerking off.
I don't know.
What is happening?
Or if he's just like a Rottweiler.
What is happening with that man?
He's like a bulldog. Like you can never have a quiet moment. He just constantly has this low rumble in the background.
I tell you, I had a bulldog for a day.
You're the one who told me about the story. Yeah.
I had a bulldog. Bulldogs are fucking stupid. I'm sorry if you have them. If you have one, you have a stupid dog. Bulldogs are fucking ridiculous.
Send your email to Tom at dissidents.com. Podcast.
Everybody with an English bulldog knows your dog is ridiculous. They can't even be born properly. They have to be born cesarean section because
really,
yeah, because they're all fucking.
No,
four.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they're not.
I don't know that I believe that.
They can't Google it right
they
now.
They can't come out.
They can't come out. They're all born C-section because they're fucking
C-section.
Yeah, so they're like a. That's why they're super expensive. Like they're like a. They're the only breed of dog that can't swim because they're like they just like you got to put like a life vest on them they go to the water. Swim. They can't even dog paddle because it's like, I'm shaped wrong. Fuck. They're like, I had this dog, this bulldog for one day. This fucking thing was the most ridiculous animal in all of history. I was so excited. I'm like, oh, he's kind of weird and cool looking.
You like weird animals.
I do.
You like
I
weird
do.
Animals.
So like the dog appealed to me. Yeah. I get him and he's like, I'm going to take him for a walk. A walk. Not a run. Not a jog. Not a sprint. A walk. He's like.
You were pushing almost three bills back then, so you were probably like that too.
I wasn't
though.
Like, yeah, but I could hear him over me. Are you kidding me? I could hear him over me. It was ridiculous. But I'm walking faster than him.
Oh, that's true.
He's
especially
he's,
back then. Yeah.
He like fell asleep. He farted like constantly.
Did he fart he all the time?
Constantly.
He sounds
gassing.
Like it
he's
sounds like
snorking
the,
or it whatever.
Sounds like,
that sound
it sounds
is.
Like the bagpipe of animals.
Then this fucking crazy ass thing fell asleep. And of course, it doesn't fall asleep and just be a dog. It sleeps just like.
Does it snort? Has apnea?
It was horrifying.
It's like a
sounds this
it's
thing
like a
made.
Rocket taking off.
It was the. I was just staring. I was constantly doing that thing where you stare incredulous at this mistake of nature that nature did not create. You're like, this is not for me.
So. Right away, you brought it back that night.
I brought it back the next day. I was like, this sleeps at my... And then I was always trying to fuck me. The thing was like... It was like a humper, and it was strong as shit. So you're like, oh my God, this
sounds like the worst dog.
I was like, this dog's like, getting a me too. Like,
it's got apnea. It's overweight. It tries to hump everything. It's the Donald Trump of dogs. I mean, come on.
No, it wasn't Republican. It wasn't that gross.
Things were never going to get better. They were never going to allow this president to enact his full agenda.
What is happening? Who makes that sound? You need to go to every doctor all the time. Just never leave. That's not a sound you make if things are going good in your body.
I can't even make fun of Josh Berenstein because I'm so distracted by the...
Come on my show. I'm going to come on my show. I'm going to come on my show. I'm going to come on my show. What the fuck?
This dude is waking one out to the bald, weird dude. Oh, Jesus.
This clip is 2 minutes and 13 seconds, and if there's a fucking uptick in his breathing, I know how this ends.
So I said, you know what? Don't even work with him. Work with the people on Twitter and Facebook that
well, yeah, don't work with the fucking... And that's... If he followed your advice, you fool, then he fucked up the entire thing because he had all the fucking houses and congresses and all that bullshit. He certainly fucking stacked the Supreme Court. He had everything going for him before the fucking midterms. And you told him, instead of going with the fucking places that you won politically, that he should work with people on Twitter? You're an asshole.
Work with them how? They have no force in effect. What is this? What does that even
it's
mean?
It's just Vox Populi bullshit, right? That's all it is.
Work with the people on Twitter and Facebook. That'll get you a wall. Said nobody who needed to get appropriations bills passed through Congress.
What I love is look at all the people that have made money. And like that one guy who had like the fucking GoFundMe for the wall and then bought a boat or whatever. Like all these people are
go
like
boat me.
Yeah, it's like all these people like they know that they can trick all these dupes.
Yeah.
Right. Like I couldn't imagine right now. There's three places that you could really make a killing. In quackery, you could make a killing right now because of all the anti-vax stuff that's going on. In religion, right now, especially if you came out as a Trump-supporting religious leader, you could make a ton of money.
Yep.
And then specifically, just duping all these Trump supporters with something, you could make a killing. Like, because they're so, Like, there, remember that Trumpy bear thing we saw? We couldn't tell whether it was real or not. It doesn't matter,
right?
Because it's going to, they made an amazing commercial for this Trumpy bear. I'll see if Ian can find it and put it on the show notes. But it's this Trumpy bear thing. The commercial's so good, you don't know if they're being true or not. But it doesn't matter, because what they'll do is they're going to sell it to both the people who hate Trump to make fun of him and the people who love Trump so that they can fuck it at night.
Right. People whose irony detectors either go off all the time or never go off at all.
And you're selling it to both markets. You could make a killing during the Trump presidency with all this stuff. You can make an absolute killing.
Yeah, we are genuinely living in a world where I know we've talked about this. It happened to me so many times in my life where I'm just like, that can't be real.
Yeah.
That has to be that has to be satirical. This cannot be real. The first time I heard the thong song, I was like, there's no way that's a real
song. That's not a real song.
And I'm wrong. I'm like wrong every single time, right? I'm wrong constantly. But I'm always looking around like, you're just fucking with me. There's no way that's real. And the last 2 years, it's every day. Yeah. Every day I'm like, no, there is no way. Now we've reached the limit of absurdity.
You and follow you, and you work with them. You tell them what you're going to do, and you do everything else you have to do by executive order. Almost become a dictator.
Is he snoring?
I don't know. Did he die? Did he fall asleep? It'd be so great if he fell asleep.
For patriotism, if you had to. Knowing that you weren't
be a
gonna have-
dictator for patriotism in a democratic country.
I don't even know what that means.
I'm going to do everything by executive order because I'm a dictator for patriotism. I wouldn't be surprised if that became a slogan. The world has gone so mad.
I think you're probably right. I think that probably is a slogan that could easily sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to. If that happens, dude, we can do this show from Canada, right?
We got to do somewhere else. I say Edinburgh. I say Edinburgh.
Beautiful.
I think it's gorgeous.
I check the weather.
I can't understand anybody over there. It's like a foreign country. It'd be amazing.
I'll go. Let's go.
Go to Glasgow to drink on the weekend.
All right.
And then you come back to Edinburgh just to sit in that beautiful park all week. Back to Glasgow for the weekend.
I don't want to live in Glasgow because your lifespan shortens mysteriously.
I don't want to live in Glasgow either, but I want to drink with those guys again.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had a great night drinking with those guys. I also had a great night drinking with the four people who wanted to come to our thing. I had a great night with those particular people, but the old guy who was eyeing me up who didn't like me. He and I were not friends. He's dead, though, now. So.
People in both parties working with you. I wouldn't say anything to Nancy Pelosi. I wouldn't say anything to any of them. Mitch McConnell, none of them. I would just literally lock myself off.
God, even your fucking mic is like clipping and like you sound terrible and you're fucking breathing like a beluga whale. Get out of here.
Congress, do what I'm going to do. Do it through executive order. Make the country great again. And then let the people of America decide in 2020.
So do you like how great I made it? Does everybody like how great I just made the country through a series of, kingly decrees?
Yeah, right.
As you've hailed me your emperor. Like we're at the very least, like we can't step on snacks. We're a democracy. We don't do this.
This is the thing that really comes out though. I watched something this week about Trump, a bunch of women. They were all middle-aged, rich white women all sitting around.
The tweets?
Asked about these tweets, and the tweets were they racist? And
we asked a group of privileged white ladies.
And they all said no. They all said no, of course not. And they said, it's these women who hate America. It's these women who are trying to ruin America. And they're like, and someone, you know, they're asking them very simple questions like, how? And they're like, oh, they're just trying to ruin America. You know what I mean? It's one of those things.
Well, but I don't know the answer to your question.
But look at the rallies. Listen to this guy. Listen to all the people that are pundits for Trump. Listen to these women that are just completely brainwashed. This is a cult. It's a cult of personality that has gone beyond political party. It stopped being political party. And now because their guy who they elected into office got attacked because he's a shitty, terrible person, now they want to turn it into, I love him.
Yeah. I wonder if it's almost, I feel like I wonder if it's almost in the reverse. Like the problem is that we've decided we're with the party. We're with the Republican Party. And as a result, It doesn't matter who the Republican Party puts up there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how onerous, how terrible, how racist, how mean-spirited, how misogynist. The thing is, that's my team. And once I've signed up for that team, whoever we elect as captain, I have to back. It's like I wonder if the sort of like incredibly hyper-partisan walls that we've created that makes it so difficult for people to even travel in different social circles around that makes it impossible for people not to back their party even when they're faced with overwhelming evidence.
I don't think that's true, though. I don't think it's true for us, at least for the left side. You know, when I think about Anthony Weiner, who on our side is like, God damn it. Where's Ant? Oh, fucking forget about it. That guy needs to come back. Who's fucking crying for him to come back? Who's crying for anybody who's had a disgrace to come back? They're not. When somebody does something wrong that's pointed out and then they're ejected from the party and they don't get to come back. And so it's different on ours. I just genuinely think it's different.
I agree with you. I think on the left versus the right does a better job of playing team ball.
Yeah.
Like, they don't stop. Break ranks.
Yeah. So we are joined by Gail Jordan from Recovering from Religion. Gail, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
So, Gail, if people aren't familiar with Recovering from Religion, tell them a little bit about that organization.
Sure. Recovering from Religion has been in existence for about 10 years. It started with Dr. Daryl Ray, who's a former minister and a former psychologist, who saw the need for a place for people to have some time and space to unpack the baggage that sometimes accompanies religion. Real simply, our mission statement is to provide hope, healing, and support for people who are struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. And so all of these years and all this that we have done have led us today to be the premier go-to organization for people who need a little support, a little assistance, a little patience, a little space to deal with those issues.
Do you think that under the current administration, people are looking for more hope?
Well, the last one, we had hope and change.
We did. We had hope and change before, and now we just have racist tweets. So I'm just curious if people are...
Now we just have sadness and despair.
Recovering from Reality Foundation need to start.
Gosh.
Gail, can I ask, like, when you say recover from religion, I describe what that means for somebody. Like, what do people need to recover from? What are the issues that people coming out of religion face?
Sure, we get asked that question quite a lot, and it probably won't surprise you to know. Recovering from Religion has a 24-hour telephone hotline and a 24-hour internet chat just for folks to reach out and to have some help whenever they need it. And it won't surprise you to know that the number one reason people come to us is not lingering fear of hell, although that's one. It's not dealing with the big cosmic issues of the universe, although that's also an issue. But the number one reason is because of fractured relationships.
Okay.
Because when someone leaves religion, religion has baked into it such a defensive protectiveness against people questioning and walking away. And so religion counters that by already having in place what's going to happen to you when you leave, because people that remain in religion are frightened of this person who has doubted this that you've heard since childhood and has pushed back against the, you know, against the flow and the mainstream. And so when someone leaves religion, very often they lose their entire community. They lose their friendships, family relationships are fractured. And so that's the number one reason that people come to us, is because sometimes it's for help to restore those relationships, and sometimes it's for help accepting that those relationships will never be restored.
Yikes. Are there specific religions or denominations that in your experience people have the hardest time recovering from?
Sure. Sure. There's, and in fact, there are religions that have language around disfellowshipping. I don't know if you've heard that word, where
that's a Jehovah's Witness thing, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. That's a Jehovah's Witness thing, where it's part of the protocol. They even know how it works, so that, and believe you me, they teach their young people this. This is what happens when we have to disfellowship someone, and the ties of family are completely overlooked. It doesn't matter if it's your mother or your child or your sister or your brother. This is the procedure. This is the protocol. When they leave the faith, you are to cut off all communication with them. Mormon has a version of that, the Mormon religion. So it's insidious the way religion has takes power over that. It's hard enough to do all of the emotional heavy lifting that's associated with losing this belief in this parent that loves you and cares about you and has a plan for your life. But in addition to all of that work, then you lose the people that you most depend upon. So it's for some people, the change, the walking away from religion can be seismic. Everything in their world changes. It's not just their point of view that has changed. It's not just their outlook on life or what they value. It's everything changes.
It seems like a lot of what you're describing would also describe sort of the defense mechanisms that almost all cult-like religions build into their processes, right? To keep people from finding you, you know, from finding other organizations that might say, you know, there's life outside of this.
Sure. I think all religions have some variation of that. Even the hippie, groovy, cool religions, it's not comfortable when a close family member doubts that and rejects it. You know, it's not... When we leave religion, we're not just saying, you know, that's okay for you. It's just not my thing. Because what we're saying is we don't have confidence that anything that you believe in is true. And how can that not be personally offensive? And so if you put yourself in the position of the religious person who's remaining, you see that. Okay, well, it's a complete rejection of things that I believe in. No matter how you slice it, no matter how gently you try to leave, no matter how loving you try to be, it's a rejection of what the other person holds most dear.
So when you help people, they call you and chat with you to try to talk themselves through this process with you. You're sort of therapy for them.
It's not exactly therapy. We're kind of careful with those words. It's peer support.
I'm already throwing the wrong words in here.
Actually,
it's not reimbursable by insurance.
Yeah.
We do have the Secular Therapy Project, and that's professionally vetted therapists. That's a database that we do connect our clients with if they need professional counseling. This is peer support, and you know the value of peer support. It's a compassionate, patient listening ear. Whenever they call in, we are very careful not to lead them through a deconversion process. We don't do that kind of thing. That's not what we're there for. We're there for them to ask their questions without any judgment. We're there to provide. We have a vast bunch of resources up to and including podcasts like Cognitive Dissonance. Whenever they ask for resources, we're there to provide wherever it is.
I'm trying to think of how dire things have to be in order for you to recommend Cognitive Dissonance. Like, what is that? What is that distress call? Like, what Commissioner Gordon asked?
I am
hell.
I am going to put from now on every Cognitive Dissonance shirt, we are peer support.
Best peer support ever.
Oh, gosh. So, Gail, you're hosting a fall excursion. Can you tell us what's happening in September?
Sure. I'm so glad you asked that. Everything that Recovering from Religion has done to expand our program has been directed at answering the question, how can we help? And about a year or so ago in our board meetings and our leadership team meetings, we recognized that there might be a need for an intense, real-time meet space religion recovery weekend where people come together. If people are coming out of religion, they know what a weekend retreat feels like. And so this weekend recovery retreat is like all the good stuff from those religious retreats and none of the bad stuff. It's all of the s'mores and the campfire and the relationships and talking late into the night and getting away into the cool mountains, all of the good stuff and none of the bad. It's in September. It's in the mountains of North Carolina in these very cool, beautiful cabins. We're going to have sessions. We're going to have professional therapist on hand if folks need a little bit of additional help. We're going to have group sessions. We're going to have a wine and cider tasting. Just the most fun weekend from start to finish. And we've opened this up to whoever it is who want to attend. If you think that, you know, that might benefit you to go to a place where other people are on a similar journey and to have people in place to be able to support you, and you can ask your questions and you can begin to think about what your reconstruction is going to look like, what launching into being a person who doesn't live their lives by dogma, what that looks like and feels like. So we have this entire retreat planned. We hope it's the first of many, but we are so excited about it.
That's not the thing that struck, I think, Cecil and I at the same time was when you said it's like anybody who's been to a religious retreat would recognize it's all the good stuff with none of the bad. I wrote down, but what about the hours long repetitive brainwashing chanting? Like, yeah. When do you have that? Like, is that at 7, 8?
And the 47 verses. Yeah, right? By
Just sing until you're not thinking anymore.
Sorry, guys, yeah. Not at this one.
So who's going to be there helping people?
Sure. We've got, of course, it's a lot of the Recovering From Religion folks, Dr. Daryl Ray, the board of directors, me. In addition to that, we have a couple of special guests. You all know Mandisa Thomas of Black Nonbelievers. She's one of our guests. Lloyd Evans, who works with Recovering Jehovah's Witness. He's one of our guests. Candace Gorham. And we have a very special guest, Sarah Roxdale. She's an Instagram influencer, and she has also done her own journey away from religion, and she's going to be joining us. And so we've got lots of fun activities planned up to and including we have an astronomy lecture from the local college. It's Daryl is going to lead us on a nature hike. It's just an immersion weekend and actually the subtitle of it is called Embracing Your Nature. Religion oftentimes stands between us and what our natural morality is, what our natural sexuality is, what our natural being a human being is. And so embracing your nature is what we're trying to get them back to, what it feels like and what it is like to be a human being, and how do we live a moral life without religion, and all of those questions that religious folks are just getting a taste of answering. And so we've completely surrounded them by this weekend event for that.
You know, I left my religion many, many, many years ago, and I was never really deep into the religion in the sense of the community. I was religious, but I was not in the community very, very connected to the religious community that I belonged to. But my wife was for many years, even after we were married. And one of the things that happened is she left her religion, and once she left, she started to get pretty depressed about some of the things that she used to do. And one of the things that she used to do was she was really into Christmas at her particular church. And we had to find new traditions. Her and I had to find new traditions to sort of help her cope with all these great memories that she grew up with and all the things that she was used to doing on Christmas. And this reminds me of that. It's like, you know, you're taking people that are, you know, that are coming out of religion that are looking for these sort of meaningful experiences that they used to have. And then you're going to create one that they really can fit in. So I think this is a great way to help people exit religion.
That's so funny that you mentioned that. That's my topic is creating. That's my little session of the weekend is creating new traditions. And it there is so much joy in when you do relaunch. And my deconversion has not been that long behind me that I don't remember. One of the things that I can recall when I first started thinking about it in an open way before, all of my charitable giving had just been to my church. I was a family that tithed. We gave our 10%. We never batted an eye. And after I left the faith and then I'm left with, who do I give money to? And so now I have this little, because it's me, I have this little color-coded chart, and I have different organizations that I'll give this to and that to. And it's one of the biggest joys of my life. Who would have thought that? Who would have known that? So there's all these new, brand new little pieces that we want to make. It's full of wonder and full of joy and full of feeling like you're part of the human community instead of just the religious community. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
You know, I will say that's something that religion does do well is they are good at community. Yeah. As a secular person, community is hard. Like, yeah. I've never been terribly religious, but I've always had that, like, jealousy of the smokers, you know, like, oh, they're out there smoking and talking. There's like, there's a sense of community and cohesion.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like everybody wants to be in the band.
Yeah.
And what I love about this weekend is it's like, yeah, all right, well, you got to create your own band.
Yeah.
And there's something kind of scary about having to do that, but there's also something really freeing about being able to choose who's in the damn band. What's really impressive is you get all this done in a weekend.
Yeah, we're recognizing the importance of that, you know, and I think groups like Oasis and Sunday Assembly, they're all seeing that, and we're kind of flying by the seat of our proverbial pants to figure out, you know, how, do we do this geographically? Do we do this online? How do we do our community? Do we just do simply secular communities, whatever political party that we're involved in? And so I know there's more than one way to do that. And so this is that part of that experimental thing is to empower people to go, you know what? You're right. You get to decide how you're going to do your community.
So Gail, both Tom and I are really excited about this excursion you're doing. Tom and I are going to become sponsors tonight. Of this.
Oh,
so.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. I thank you. And I'll tell you what that means to me. We've had several folks, so many people have reached out to us and so many people want to go and it's just a little bit beyond their budget. And so we've had people ask for a subsidy or ask for some kind of assistance for it. And as our sponsors have come in, we've been able to say, that's one more person that gets to attend the weekend. So, I'm so glad to hear
that's
you say
great.
That. Thank you so
that's
much.
Great. So can you tell people where they can find this information?
Sure. recoveringfromreligion.org. Pretty straightforward website. And there's an excursion tab right across the top, as well as the donate tab and the volunteer tab. It's all right there, as well as our telephone number for our telephone hotline and for the internet chat bubble is right there if you want to talk to us. It's all in one convenient place at recoveringfromreligion.org.
It sounds like an amazing event.
Yeah,
it really does.
It's really
necessary.
We really hope it goes great. We're going to try to have you on after it's over to talk about it after it's finished. We really hope it goes great. Gail, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you again for having me, and I look forward to it.
So we want to thank our patrons. We especially want to thank our newest patrons, Rebecca, Andrew, Jesus Ate All My Ferrets, Sarah, Aaron, and Brian. Thank you very much for your patronage. Of course, we may have more patrons later because we are doing a live stream in a few moments. You might have missed it on Thursday night, but you can catch it if you're hearing this on Monday. You can go back to YouTube. You can go back to the Facebooks, the Twitters, the other places that this thing posted, and you can watch it. We're not sure if it was funny yet.
So I'm going to assume it was great.
It might have been.
I know I was particularly
maybe,
great in the future.
Could have been. Who knows?
Which is your past.
So maybe it was great, but check it out. We got a couple of messages. One was, we got a couple of different people who actually did do the math on the earthquake / nuke, if it was under your feet. And Michael sent us a really interesting graph. I'm going to see if I can have Ian post it. Not a graph, but like a seismic, whatever. Seismograph? Is that what I call it? Seismograph? So it's a seismograph image of what a nuke looks like and then what a seismic activity looks like. And the difference is very, very, I mean, it's very striking. You can totally see the difference. Starts out slow, explodes. That's very much sort of like everything that happens in my life. And then the other one starts with a bang and then
tapers off.
Again, sounds
that's
a lot
not,
like my life
doesn't,
too.
I don't see the difference.
Yeah. So, but we got a bunch of people who are basically saying, look, you can't feel it from a very short distance away. You really can't. It does not travel like an actual earthquake does.
Bottom line is like the amount of energy released in an earthquake event is just orders of literal magnitude greater than a nuclear weapon.
We got a couple of messages from people asking if we can meet up for a drink. It's really tough with Tom and I. Tom only comes out to the city really to record the show.
Right.
And we do it on Thursday nights and it's normally late when we're done. And we really just don't have a lot of opportunity to do that. We are going to try to plan something in the future that's going to be a meetup. We're hoping at, you know, like one of the cool spaces here in Chicago, but we haven't set down a date yet. We'll let everybody know when that's going to happen. And then we're going to hopefully have a really fun meetup. But meeting just like after we record is just so hard. Things aren't even open when we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. We tried to go out for a drink with Noah one time.
It was ridiculous.
And it was like just trying to even get into a bar around here because it's like, you know, it's 11:30 at night. Most of the bars are like, get the fuck out of here. Right. The lady stared fucking daggers at us to get us a fucking gin and tonic for a few minutes, just for like 2 minutes to talk, you know? Right. So it's just really tough on these weeknights. But we do thank everybody who invites us out. We really do appreciate it. It's just with all the stuff that we're doing, all the scheduling we have, it's just so hard to get together. Okay, so there's a meme out there. It's the hide your kids, hide your wife meme. It's from a long time ago, from like 10 years ago. Now, I remember this meme from back then. Tom, you had never seen it. You just saw it the other day. Haley showed it to me yesterday. Just saw it the other day. But I knew about it from a long time ago, but it was one of those things like, it's been flushed from the RAM? Like, gosh, with 10 years now, it's something I didn't even put two and two together with this guy who, you know, is clearly saying, you know, hide your kids, hide your wife, because there was like a burglar or something in his neighborhood.
There's a rapist.
Yeah, rapist like, yeah, in his neighborhood. Crazy. And he's talking to a TV camera and it's an old meme. It's like, you know, really old. And so it completely slipped my mind. But everybody told us that we missed the connection.
Sorry, we missed
the connection. Sorry, I wasn't up on all the memes.
I missed it entirely when it happened.
We didn't meme correctly. But yeah, a bunch of people, Joy and a bunch of other people sent in, hey guys, just so you know, that she was referencing something from 10 years ago.
Right.
She's basically doing a skit from Monty Python. Last week, I was talking about having to decode a manual. We were talking about the Bible.
Right.
And someone said, well, as you were saying that, this was on the side of a box I was picking at my my place of business.
This is great. Direction for use. Remove the batteries holder, put the two 18650 into the flashlight, and according to the positive, negative, rightly, warning. Attention the anode and cathode of the battery and putting it into the battery holder. Do not irradiate the eyes directly brightness light will harm the eyes.
Sounds really bad.
When the light fails in, please use new powerful battery to replace the old ones.
You gotta replace it.
Please take out the battery when torch will be no use for some time.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome.
Made in China.
Oh, man. Tell you what. So thank you, Matt, for sending that. That was very funny. Reminded me of the Google Translates we used to do.
Oh, they've got unfortunately good.
They've gotten better. Yeah. Okay, so we got a video from Jason. Oh. Holy shit. This is crazy. I'm going to post it on this week's show notes. This is a recording of a dude doing a chiropractic... it's like a maneuver. I mean, like it's like a finishing move, I think is what it is. But it's one of those, he has this fucking thing on this person's head. And it's like a fucking, he's basically got their head in like a strap basket.
Yeah, like a moving strap.
And he's got this trapeze holder thing or a water ski holder thing in his hand. And he fucking almost yanks this woman's spine out like fucking Scorpion in Mortal Kombat.
She screams.
Unbelievable. He pulls on this thing and she jerks and she screams and starts bawling. And he's like passing it off. He's like, don't worry, it's going to be fine. And it's like, holy shit, he looks like he fucks this lady up hardcore.
This woman on the adjusting table, this woman moves a solid foot.
Yeah,
like
and
he
fast.
Yanks her by her skull.
Like if she had an accelerometer on her, it would be like she's dead. So Be Excellent sent this in. I want to just play this really quickly. This was a question we had asked.
Hey guys, love the show. I just wanted to quickly call and tell you in regards to pedophilia that you were talking about last week. If the child is aged 11 to 14, it's hebephilia. And if they are 14 or above, it is apephophilia. So they really got everything classified nowadays. Glory hole.
If it's 14 or above, so I could fuck B. Arthur and it's apephophilia or whatever. Phoebophilia. B. Arthur's dead. That's like
is B. Arthur dead?
I don't know. Maybe. Oh. But if she is, then it's a phoebonecrophilia.
Well, and if they bleed, it's hemophobophilia.
Oh, they're going to bleed.
Oh, God.
You said it. Fuck you.
But I
fuck
you.
Did say it.
Oh, right, you did you say it. Yeah, that. Tag, you're it. So that's what they say when they do the hemophilia. Anyway, so we want to thank Gail Jordan from Recovering from Religion for joining us today. You can find links to their website and to that retreat on this week's show notes. And check it out if you're interested. If you are recovering from religion, this sounds like a really great thing to attend.
Absolutely.
So it might help you, like she said, start new traditions and figure out your way past religion. You can check it out on this week's show notes, like I say. That's going to wrap it up for this week. We are going to leave you, like we always do, with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo-quasi-alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain deadpan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your signs. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.